Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Incubator Podcast. I'm your co-host, Darren Boyd.
And this is Abir Saran. And today we're joined by Matt Tesoro, Distinguished Engineer at No Name Security. And No Name Security is a leading platform in API security, a unicorn, billion-dollar valuation, a ton of capital raised, and a lot of momentum behind it. Before we jump in, Matt, would you do us the honor of sharing a little bit about yourself and a background, and then we'll dive in.
Yeah, sure. So I started out life as a web developer in the ancient days, like Netscape days, which really gives away my age, but the Distinguished Engineer also is a bit of a clue. So I started out life writing web apps, and I quite like that, but then I caught the security bug and kind of flipped to the other side, and I sort of lucky for me, applications really started blossoming. And as I started out pen testing. And so as a pen tester, having written apps, I knew how to get into the heads of the developers who had written them and probably thought, oh, I bet they skipped a little corner here. Let me try something. Right. And I was fairly successful as a pen tester. Did that for a while and then got kind of tired of the, well, for lack of a better term, the wham, bam, thank you, ma'am style of pen testing, right? Where you just get creds on Monday, you find a list of badness, you hand it off by Friday, and then it's rinse and repeat the next week. And so I went internal, so to speak, and I started the product security team at Rackspace. I mean, if relating to API security, there were loads of APIs because they're a cloud company, and I was in charge of, you know, securing their cloud from the infrastructure up as part of the product security team. So yeah, APIs. So I've been around them for a long time. Found out that there's some interesting things you can do to make your life better. And luckily now the tooling is finally starting to catch up. Back at Rackspace days, it was kind of curl. Curl and write your own was the tooling we had on hand. And that was pretty awful and didn't scale. And at least now that APIs are kind of eating the world, we have something that can scale with it, which is quite handy.
Yeah, fair. Appreciate that. And Matt, you've done a tour, a long tour at OWASP Foundation as well, adjunct professor, and you're at No Name Labs as well. Can you give us a little background on what you're doing at Labs for No Name Security?
Yeah, so the idea behind No Name Labs is to produce some content and also some, we're looking at a bunch of different things, but the idea is to get the word out and help people learn a little bit more about API security, right? It's very similar to AppSec, so you might think I've got a fairly strong AppSec background. I'm good on APIs, and you do have good coverage. There's a, you know, if you look at the two sets, there's a pretty good overlap between those two sets. But there's also a lot of stuff that's just very different and unique to the API side of the house. So the idea really was to do kind of two things, do some interesting research and produce some reports on what we find. And this is kind of greenfield research. We don't know what we're trying to produce. We're just digging up, you know, flipping over stones. And then at the end, when we find out something, we're going to write that up. And then the opposite side is providing tools and techniques and information and helpful guidance to people to understand better what makes API security unique and different from what they may have been doing in a traditional AppSec program.
Yeah, and one of the things we really love too is I don't know if we stressed it enough, but No Name, which by the way was sounds like a cleverly accidental way of naming the company, which is kind of a fun story, but you're the fastest growing pure play API company out there and on the market. We're really excited about some of the content you're creating, so appreciate that.
Well, and to be honest, it doesn't surprise me because I, like I said, I was a pen tester, then I was doing internal running AppSec teams. I honestly, if you'd asked me 2 years ago if I'd ever be working for a vendor, I would have told you, are you kidding me? No, like, why would I do that? I've been yelling at vendors for years. But Carl Mattson, the CISO, did a quick demo of the product to me, and I just thought, oh man, if I'd had that when I was at Rackspace, my life could have been a lot less gray hair creating than it was when I was at Rackspace, because we were perpetually on our back foot and behind. And if I'd had something like what No Name has produced, I might have actually been able to, you know, get more sleep and get less gray.
Yeah, indeed. And Carl's been out there on the customer side for a very long time. We know Carl from a little bit of past, and glad to see that he's over there as well. One of the things we wanted to kick off, though, is we always love talking about why is this thing so important? Why now? And why should people start paying attention? And one of the interesting things we saw, of course, in a couple years ago, Gartner came out and said API abuses will be the biggest attack vector. They predicted at 2022. I think Jeremy DeHoyne came out and said, "Oops, we got there in 2021." So this is a major thing. And even in 2021, we saw some quite extensive, quite large breaches from some companies that do things very well in terms of development. We saw it with Peloton. We saw it with LinkedIn, John Deere. It kind of goes on and on and on. So this is a problem. We've reached a stage where people should pay attention. But can you walk us through maybe your experience, what you're seeing, and why you think people should really start paying attention to this space? And we'll kind of get into the nuances of how they can begin.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, it is very interesting when those very mature players that you assume have all their ducks in a row don't. That's a bit spooky. And the other sort of compelling factor here, if you look at how the internet has sort of shifted and changed over time, we were just happy with static websites back in the day. Then we started doing like interesting web formy things, web form type things on the internet. But now we're to the point where we have mobile, we have tablets, we have Internet of Things. We have all these different things that want to consume our information. And it's not just the traditional, I crack open a browser, I have requests and responses going back and forth. And so data has kind of become the new oil. And how you share that data, particularly with a diverse set of clients, is an API. I mean, that's just a fundamental part of computer science. That the crazy term, was it Akamai, I believe, said that 83% of internet traffic is API initiated. That's nutty. So it's kind of no surprise that the attackers are going towards APIs, because one, that's a shim between your company's data and the outside world. And two, that's where the action is. That's, you know, my mobile client is talking to it. My web apps is likely talking to it. Like APIs are everywhere. And so it's interesting that companies now are just starting to realize that, like, wait a minute, we kind of have started with that. I remember 2 years ago when we got that first API for that thing, wait a minute, we have APIs for everything now. And I think they're just waking up to the fact that these things have sort of organically grown kind of under the radar a bit, honestly. And now I have to keep track of them. I have to, you know, figure out what's going on. And these things have sort of slipped by the normal controls and gates and inventory that we would do, because it's really easy for a company to say, we have a mobile app and we look and test that mobile app, or we have a web application and we look and test that web application. But behind both of those things are APIs. Mm-hmm. Right. And sometimes you get some kind of coverage looking at the mobile or the web app, but you don't get full coverage.
So on that note, Matt, what are companies doing today? Right. So maybe they were caught off by surprise, as you indicated, with the growth and prevalence of APIs. So what or have they been doing to assure some level or degree of protection? Why are they not jumping up and screaming or crying bloody murder here for API security?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I've heard is just visibility. I think they don't know how big or little of a problem it is in any kind of quantifiable way. And I think that's where a lot of people are starting. Like, I know I have APIs, but I don't know if I have 10 or 10,000. I just know I have some. And then I don't really know what data is going over those APIs, right? Which is also a very important concern, right? So I think largely companies are concerned with just getting a handle on what their exposure is and what that represents in terms of risk. And I think that'll drive a lot of future conversations around, okay, like, now we know the state of affairs and we're probably not too happy with it. How can I now get my arms around that and shore it up and be confident enough that I can sleep well at night, to be quite honest with you? It's mostly visibility is what I hear. People, like, if you talk to CISOs, they kind of know that they have lots of APIs and they should be looking at this, but they don't have a feel for really how big or small a risk that is. And so getting a handle on it is pretty important. The other big driver I've heard is our devs want to go faster, which they do, and businesses aren't really going to argue with them there. But how do you go faster and know you have some kind of belt and suspenders around that faster dev cycle, right? How do I get more APIs out there quicker, but not lose sleep at night? And that's probably the secondary driver I've heard.
It's kind of interesting. I think we could spend quite a bit of time on this, and we probably should. So some of what you're saying there is, it's almost like the imperative is maybe, of course, from the security side, that we need to get our arms around what's out there. And not only what's out there is is it out there in a form that we believe it's out there, right? Because like really good development companies, I find they're going out there, they're designing the API before they ever code. They code, they document, they try and put rigor, they try and put standards, they have architectural patterns they follow, they even have security patterns they follow. This is that whole shift left. And quite frankly, we put so much on these engineers. Engineering is such a valuable resource to a company, and these engineers are incredibly valuable. But it seems like the imperative is beyond just that discovery, because now we've got potentially deprecated APIs, and are we actually deprecating those APIs once we flag them as such? And there's so much discipline that goes around that. But do you find that, is there any cry from the developer community to have capabilities such as this? Or do you feel it's really driven by the security practitioners that want to make sure they're part of the process with this developer velocity? Where is it really emanating from? And is there at least a voice on both sides saying, recognizing the need? Maybe one voice is a little bit stronger, but is it across the board?
No, I think it is across the board, because I am hearing from the developer side as well, saying like, you have an expectation for me to create this secure thing under some time and resource crunches that are usually insane. I used to be a developer. I felt that pain, right? We need it yesterday. And by the way, it's 20,000 lines. So start typing, right? And no mistakes, right? Which of course is going to happen when you've got a gun to your head and you're typing code as quick as you can. But from the development side, it ends up being kind of at the other end of the spectrum. It's kind of a test side of the house, I would say, where I would like to be able to, as a developer, check in my code. If presumably you're a mature enough shop with CI/CD, CI/CD runs, and part of that deploy, that the pre-prod deploy of the API is some kind of security assessment, right? So that I know at least going out the door, I haven't added to our technical debt, our security technical debt, right? And that's been it's been interesting because it's been on both kind of ends. I kind of see the what do we have as an inventory question, right? Now, like, what's my estate of as a CISO? I want to know all of the APIs that are out there and kind of what risk I have, and then I'm going to focus some efforts on the spookiest parts. When you flip to the other side of the house, it's I know I have to produce code and I have to produce it at speed with velocity. I want some kind of sanity check at the very least, so that when I am writing this code, I can know that if I get over the hurdle of whatever this CI/CD security testing is, I have a good assurance that it's actually accurate. Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing that I've seen on the development side of the house, which there are some interesting ways to address this, is you mentioned it, the spec, right? Your open API or Swagger spec file. It says, this is how my API acts and looks. Some of those are very incomplete. They may say that I get an int into this particular method, but they don't go to the granularity of saying, by the way, it's a phone number and it should have these things. And there's validation you can put in those open API specs that just gets dropped to the floor. It's a time thing. And then the flip side is you have drift, right? If I'm moving really fast, I may have had a spec that got written a week ago, but what gets produced doesn't match that spec. And we're just now getting to having tools that can do things like look at the reality of what's actually exposed on that API versus what the developers have on their documentation that says what's in that API. And having done testing, I've seen some really interesting drift between the reality that the developers have for that API and what's actually up on the internet.
Yeah. So Matt, it's about, velocity, developers, ease of experience, or the developer experience meeting the controls and guardrails put in place. So in effect, how does Noname accomplish this? Where does Noname play and integrate in this whole ecosystem?
Yeah, so there's three major areas that Noname doesn't play in that our platform covers. What we call posture management, right? And that's knowing what you have and the data that is being either requested from or sent from the APIs. So what data is coming in and out of the system, and what exactly is the traffic look like? Like, I have so many APIs with so many endpoints. And one interesting facet of Noname that I think some of the, particularly the DAS tooling, falls short on, mm-hmm. is its definition of an API sort of internally is it's a host name, it's a path, and it's a method. Because honestly, a request to users admin that's a GET request is a lot less scary than a request to a user's endpoint that's a delete request, right? And if you don't have that granularity, if you don't make a distinction at that level, you can use some, you can have some gaps in your coverage. But that's the posture management side of the house. The second portion of it is runtime protection. And so Noname's platform will watch the API traffic in an out-of-band configuration and tell you exactly what's happening, right? And there's lots and lots of testing, but attack traffic that can happen that's very easy to spot, right? If I send an overly large request, that shows up like a lit up something or other at night, right? To something that's watching your traffic. Those runtime protections have a good deal of visibility into what's going on. And they also have the nice advantage of feeding back into the posture management. If you have a list of APIs, like I've done this before at product security teams, where I try to get a list of all of our apps or APIs. And by the time you have some poor, unfortunate FTE spend a year doing that, it's already out of date, right? Because you're watching runtime, I can keep that up to date automatically and know when there's a change, which is really fantastic. And then the final part is the SDLC part, or shift left, if you want to call it that. And this is where we have testing that is not only just sort of normal DAS testing, but it's informed by the traffic that it's seen in runtime. So it can be highly accurate focused testing. And you can even reduce that testing to just a portion of the API estate, like only these particular calls with these methods I want to test because those are the spookiest of them. So you can have very focused, fast testing.
Mm-hmm. So to be clear, Matt, currently DAST has its shortcomings in this space, but there's no clear actual product in the marketplace that addresses API security. So in effect, this is an open vulnerability domain and area altogether. And so organizations aren't doing anything about it. And obviously they should, which is a call for Noname and API security as a whole. But what are people doing in this vacuum here? Because it's pretty scary.
Yeah, there's some work going on, and this is where the overlap of AppSec and API security can help you in some regards. You can get some kind of coverage. You mm-hmm. probably have a WAF. WAFs aren't great at understanding API traffic, but they're not terrible at it, and they can certainly reduce some of the more blatant attacks. They're not going to get you that much. I don't know if I've never heard a reasonably scientifically derived percentage. I would guess it's a low percentage, a low two-digit percentage, but who knows? So you get something from your WAF, you have a firewall, right, that gives you some kind of protection. If you are doing SaaS testing, you can obviously make sure the code is fairly secure if your SaaS program is up to date. And then the other thing I've seen is even when some companies understand that they have APIs and they have a need to test them, they sort of do this second order testing. They say, well, our web application is backed by APIs. If we dynamically test our web application, that's testing our API because the data flows back to it and we should be good. And you do get some kind of coverage, but if your web app doesn't call all of the possible APIs, now you have gaps. And do you know that the web app calls all the possible APIs in all the possible ways? You probably don't, right? And same for mobile that are API driven in the back end. If you test the mobile app, you may be testing how it runs within that platform. And maybe even you have client controls built into your mobile app that don't allow you to make nefarious calls. But I'm an attacker. I don't need to use your mobile app. I just need to talk HTTP to your endpoint. Like I can do that with a lot of different tools. So you get, I mean, it's not bad. And I would not encourage people to stop testing their mobile and testing their web app. But they have to understand that that's an incomplete coverage.
Yeah, I think you mentioned a couple of things that I think are really interesting. That discovery or posture is obviously a powerful word, but you also do very precise and granular verification. So I want to come back to when you're discovering APIs, when you're out there and you're looking at what is really transpiring on the wire, you're doing it with a lot of granularity. And I think it's interesting because you're reconstituting the schema. If somebody makes an API call, you hear it, you see it, and then you can start reconstituting that schema. And to your point, drift happens. It's a reality. And you can give very, very precise measurement back. I'm curious if you can walk me through, either through practical example or just your take on this, how do we bridge, like how do we create some of these feedback loops Because if I'm a developer and I'm creating this and I've moved on and I've got a roadmap, I've got a backlog of activities I'm working on, and now we're witnessing something in real time that is expressing drift, potential expressions of vulnerability, how do we make sure that we're feeding back that information? Because we have a couple options. We can first address it, and maybe we tie it into a SOAR. Maybe we just do some automation to close out some of those issues. But there's this fundamental that we have to come back and we have to potentially correct something at time of creation. How is that practically happening? And how do you short circuit some of that process? Because the one thing that nobody likes is lost engineering cycles. And we want to minimize those wherever possible. So how does Noname really come together and enable some of that conversation?
Yeah, so I'm going to set aside the whole incident response kind of thing you should do anyway, right? That's kind of, we'll just assume that is bog standard and out of scope for this answer. But for Noname, there's several things it can do. Because it's watching the traffic live, it can see the minute there is a change, right? It can know, and it can, the way our platform is designed, can tell you exactly what changed and when. So I can know that last Tuesday at 3:05, a new endpoint showed up on this API that wasn't there before. Right. So you can do alerting if you would like at the level of those API changes and now send back to the appropriate product team and say, hey, why does your API now have this new method? What's going on here? Right. You can have that conversation. It also has a built-in tool to be able to diff its generated Swagger spec or OpenAPI spec versus the spec that you use. And you can find these gaps. Like, wait a minute, you know, you think there's 12 methods. Traffic tells us there's 15. Like, something is not right. Another interesting flip side I've actually seen with some of our customer conversations is you can find APIs that you think are being used that never get called. So it almost pre-populates a list of things you can deprecate. Like, we're not sure how many people are still using V1 of our API. V2 has been out for a year. You know, when can I start shutting it down? Well, like, there's no traffic in a large period of time to that V1. You can start turning that stuff off.
Yeah, I think that's really, really powerful. And I imagine you can have hooks into the pipeline process that would tie together some of those observations right into when we deployed that version of code. Right. I've got SemVer on semantic versioning on some of my deployments, and I imagine we can make those connections and closures right through our pipeline and automation to make these kind of connections easier. I believe that's probably a capability that exists.
Yeah, definitely Noname's platform was kind of designed with the sort of we're better together mentality. There's 72, if I remember correctly, although we keep adding integrations like crazy. And so, yes, we can tie into things like your SIM. We can tie into Jira. We can tie into any kind of ticketing system to raise a Jira ticket to say, hey, you know, you're on this product team. Why is there a new API? Those kind of things can happen all in as part of the platform. Because one of the things you realize when you start looking at the API landscape is, there's a lot of different players and stakeholders that are involved, right? You may have an API gateway. You probably have an API gateway admin. You have a network team, right? That's going to keep the packets flowing to and from your API. You have a product team. You may have product owners. You may have devs. All these different stakeholders all have a role to play within the API landscape, and you need to have a way to talk to them. And like anything, I mean, this, I think, hopefully, well, I'd like to say AppSec has completely learned this. I don't know that we have, but ideally AppSec has learned that you don't talk to your constituents in your language, you talk in their language, right? If I want to get something across to somebody who speaks French, I speak French at them, even if it's kind of crappy French, what it would be for me, right? That's much better. So if I'm talking to a dev, let's put a Jira ticket in a backlog, because that's how they work. Right, as opposed to PDF sent to them via email, which is not how they work.
Yeah. So, Matt, you mentioned integrations with, you know, your SIM and potentially SOAR aspects. So, if we do talk about the incident response aspect of things, how does Noname integrate or play into that? How do you see organizations doing it well from an IR perspective? And you know, what does that scenario look like from your vantage point?
Yeah, so there's sort of a maturity curve here, and Noname handles sort of the three kind of fundamental use cases, right? We have manual alerting, which just means we raise a flag in our platform. I mean, that's great, but that's not very useful generally, but that we just do that because, hey, it's there. And then we have two other modes, which is what I would call semi-automatic and automatic. So semi-automatic, I can raise a ticket and fire off human interaction. So I can drop a ticket in ServiceNow that someone on the appropriate team can pick up and then validate as a human that, yes, this is truly an issue and take the corrective action, right? That's one path. The second path is an automated response from the platform. So our platform could say, reach out to your API gateway and deauth a JWT token, right? And kill that connection right there because something very nefarious is going on. Mm-hmm. And the maturity is kind of, I think most people are a little hesitant to completely make these things automatic at first, and fairly understandable, honestly, I get that. So I think the more mature teams have a playbook and have actually done, if nothing else, a desktop exercise to say, hey, if I see a huge spike in traffic to my API, what do I do? Is that a talk to networking and have them block it at a gateway, you know, firewall kind of thing? Is that an API, like API gateway configuration change? Do I limit it there? Like understanding what you would do in the various classes of attacks and having a runbook for that, I think is a great sign of maturity. And the more mature clients that we talk to have those things in place. And it's just a matter of saying, these are the pieces of infrastructure that a human would have to reach out to. Let me wire Noname's platform into that and sort of short circuit the time it takes to get those automations done.
Now, from a platform perspective, does Noname clearly identifies the vulnerability? Is there a role that Noname plays in terms of remediation other than the integrations with the appropriate functions for that remediation?
So really for on the remediation side of the house, I would put that more in the SDLC side of things, right? Okay. And now obviously runtime can give you validation that the remediations are correct, mm-hmm. right? Which is a good thing. But really to test those and make sure you're not, you know, those remediations were accurate, you can do testing. And as I said, that's highly focused testing. I can only, if there's, let's say, an issue with my, I'm just going to beat up on my add users method, right? There's some kind of problem with add users method call. You can test only add users, even if there's, you know, well, shoot, I worked with an insurance company that had, what did they tell me, 425 methods on one of their APIs. Right. So if I don't want to test all 428, I just want to test one, I test one. So you can really narrowly focus and wire that into CI/CD mm-hmm. so that as a you know development shop say issue 123, I say it's fixed. I can validate that by running a quick test on just that scope of the issue. And then everyone's happy because we know that it's fixed and we move off to production and everyone's good.
Yeah, I think you're playing into something else that I'm really curious about, which is going back to it, I think developers are exceptionally great at creating their own boundaries, and I've seen some, or we've seen some companies that are doing some wonderful things and even defining how they approach something like an API. But you know, going back to our introduction, you are the fastest growing pure play API security vendor in the space. Are you going down a path of starting to articulate best practices around API development, best practices around API security? So there's the security, obviously, where you play, but of course that extends and blossoms out into other areas, including how you define, how you approach, maybe tenets, like, hey, we advocate that you should reuse as much as possible, make your API boundaries against business capabilities versus whatever. So there's lots of ways to start to craft an approach even, which we know that as that gets more and more mature and it gets tighter and tighter, of course, that will make everything else cascade downstream more complete. And so is that something that maybe Noname Labs is starting to focus on, which is some of these real best practices that start to have kind of concentric circles out from the core of security? Or is that something that... it's too early yet to start to really share and promote?
I wouldn't say it's too early, but it is still pretty early days. And I don't believe this material is live yet, although it should be very shortly. I did some work looking at the OWASP API top 10, right? The top 10 risks for APIs. It's kind of boilerplate, something you would do if you're worried about API security. And I took that and looked against the OWASP cheat sheet series. And the cheat sheet series for OWASP is a series of highly focused, like, you have this issue, how do you fix it from a development point of view, not just this long diatribe of, you know, multiple pages on what happens with cross-site scripting. It's like, here's how you fix it, right? It's very developer fix focused. And so we mapped all of those API top 10 to which cheat sheets make sense. So now if you have an issue for Bola, we have a list of the top 10 or the OWASP cheat sheets rather that say, these are the things you need to address. So we're pretty early in that. The other effort that we've been working towards, and we've done this with some of our customers, is doing a sort of I don't know if you're familiar with OWASP SAM, the software assurance maturity model. But SAM is a way to sort of measure the maturity level of your, AppSec program. Mm-hmm. And we have a focused version of it that just talks about API security. And we've done that for some of our customers, said, like, let's give you an assessment of where you're at right now and use that as a roadmap of how you can get better over time. Because, you know, everybody would love to be better tomorrow, but the reality is you need to do this incrementally over time. And so SAM and a SAM assessment will give you that.
Yeah. Let me double click on that, Matt. I did recently review a SAM maybe panel that or a instruction that Carl was leading. So what's the ideal starting point? We've talked about that, hey, API security is, you know, everyone's kind of a wake-up call in terms of an emerging real threat and vulnerability. So do they start with actually understanding from a SAM standpoint? Or where do you think that they should start out to address API security and implement a solution like Noname into their organization?
I would definitely say if you haven't already done some groundwork to understand, you know, the need and the risk profile you have and how mature you are in that field or that area, I think SAM is a perfect thing because it really does sort of give you a nice vendor agnostic look at this is the state of affairs today, right? And you kind of have to know that to know where to focus your efforts. I having run AppSec programs, like I needed to know how mature we were to understand where I can, I only have so many sort of FTE resource chits I can put on the table. I need to understand where to place those most effectively. Mm-hmm. And with something like SAM, I can do that, right? I can understand this is a substantial weakness compared to our other areas. This is where I want to double down on my limited bandwidth of FTEs to get things fixed and shore up.
Yeah, well, just going further on that, so DevSecOps has security done well in organizations, right? And we want to have SAM and a maturity model put in place that introduces more burden or overhead on in terms of the security teams, in terms of the developers. So how best, in your view, from a practitioner standpoint, do we bring this all together, right? Amidst everything else that is out there in terms of the pipeline integration, AppSec programs, how do you see it in perfect scenario, this happening? And just a follow on to that. So SAM is out there from an OWASP perspective. Folks can kind of evaluate it on their own. Is it something that Noname also has kind of a view into it as part of any type of support you guys provide to clients looking at API security?
Ah, gotcha. I would definitely say, like, fundamentally, if you're going to start making decisions to focus on risk reduction, the more data you can have, right? And you come into this interesting dilemma of, I'd like to gather data, but at some point I have to say I've got enough data to make a decision, mm-hmm. right? It's sort of the, where is that fundamental inflection point between a guess and a decision? And it's how much data you can gather, right? And so I like to think of a SAM assessment as a way to get something driven from a best guess kind of decision to a true data-driven decision. And I forgot your second question about Noname. Dang it, I got too into the weeds.
Well, if we collect that data from a SAM assessment, right? So now OWASP provides all the data or structure from a SAM framework to for an organization to do it. Does Noname take a view of that and say, hey, here's kind of an API version of it for you to look at and kind of accelerate that, because doing any of these assessments, collecting all this data is already a burden on top of teams as it is.
Okay. Got it now. Yeah. I'm back. Thank you for that. And yes, definitely. That's one of the things we do is we have a lot of very, very good engineers right around Noname that guess what, deal with APIs all day long. And so they'll help you focus that on the scope of just your API suite and can ask you really pointed questions. And we have people that really understand a lot of the pieces of infrastructure, right? People that used to work at MuleSoft and really get that gateway. People that used to work at Kong and really get that gateway, mm-hmm. right? So we have the expertise in-house to really laser focus those assessments on the infrastructure that you have, because you're right. I mean, the SAM is fantastic as a generic piece of assessment material, but you do have to tailor it to your business. And if you don't understand your API space very well to begin with, you may not even be asking the right questions mm-hmm. of the people that you need to ask. So that's where I think the value add from Noname is.
And I'm really curious about that too. So you're right. Everybody has limited cycles. Security tends to be really anemic in terms of FTEs, and they have so much responsibility in front of them. When you look at something like the SAM, is that even a great starting point, or should we be advocating to say, forget about some question response approach to this or a workshop approach. Let's instead go down a discovery path. Because if I ask you how many APIs you have, you're probably wildly off, and you could be off by like a magnitude just in that question alone. So does it make sense as terms of in terms of engaging anybody to really push for, let's start with the discovery, let's give you the visibility and posture first, and then we can go from there. And is that something that Noname advocates for, has SKUs for, is able to kind of come in and help with maybe even a larger type assessment going down that path? Is that a more practical way to get the right eyes on this and exposure?
I think it is a very practical way, but a lot of that is more based on the driver within the company who is our potential client, right? For some of them, they have a mindset that their testing side of the house is really the part that they care about. And we could tell them all day long about posture, and they're going to say, that's cute, that's great, I don't care, we want to test. Well, okay, fine. Like, we handle testing, we'll do that. But if I was running a program that I wanted to have to be strong and be well rounded in fundamentals, I would look at that discovery, because it's pretty much what I've done. And all that, like when I went started at Rackspace, we had no listing of all of our different cloud bits. We started the process of listing all of our different cloud bits, because right, if you get a cloud files block storage or the object store, right, that's not a thing. That's not a repo somewhere that makes up block storage object store, right? That's a whole bunch of different team software that comes together to make that product. And so we had to go do that discovery. And sadly, at that vintage, it was manual, right? If I could have snapped my fingers and gotten that by watching traffic in the course of a couple of days, I would have been a year's worth of FTE time turning over rocks, right? Done. And the biggest thing is the usual ratio of AppSec to developers, I mean, in the good places, it's 1 to probably 100.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe 10 to 100 if you're really lucky. I mean, we had, I don't know how many developers we had at Rackspace. We had 12 people at the peak in the product security group. Right. And that we had a Dillard's worth of developers, because we were in a former mall that they changed into offices. Right. We had a Dillard's worth of developers, you know, and 12 people. So the only way you can make that work is to, one, get that picture. And then two, the other thing that's a sign of success is finding ways to make your security products self-service, right? And so you could create a login for your dev teams to log in to the Noname platform and have them test pre-prod, or you know, whatever the UAT or whatever you call your prior to production environments, right, where their CI/CD is being delivered, right? You could do that for them, right? That's something you could do to drive that much farther left, because I think developers will be successful if we explain to them what the sort of security hurdles they have to leap over, if for lack of a better term, and how to do that testing early, right? If I can give you something that runs in your IDE or runs during CI/CD, and you know you're good, everybody wins, right? I did a similar program at Duo Security where we had a whole bunch of tooling wired into our repos. It was either SAST or SCA tooling. And I purposefully designed it to be containerized so that the very same containers we ran up in AWS, a developer could pull those down and run them locally on their laptop. And they knew the gauntlet they were going to get when they checked in, and I got it a webhook for a merge to master, right? They could run that locally and have no surprises, because who wants a surprise?
Yeah, sure. One follow-up on that, because I really want to make sure that we're talking something practical, which is, so we just talked about this ratio of security practitioners to developers. Now, if we come in and say, the one thing we want to express back to you is some form of posture. Well, we've got developers that are doing rapid prototyping, and maybe they had to cut some corners. We've got they're onboarding customers, they're onboarding partners, they're dealing with internal constituents, et cetera. How do we put some edges around this to say, hey, if we're going to come in, here's the people we need at the table. We can make this fairly contained to start to give you a vignette or just a view into some segment of this. Where's an easy place to start? Because you're right, to run this for several days, maybe we can. And maybe that captures all sorts of different use cases. But is that practical for an organization that is already overburdened? And I know we're hunkering down on that overburdened concept, but is that practical? Or do you come in and say, here's how we can really get focused, and when we prove that out, why don't we take on this next use case? So can you walk through that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. There's two sort of major things I would recommend to somebody who came to me that with that concern, right? One, posture in the Noname platform includes the data and data classification of the data going in and out of APIs. And we'll auto-classify, I forget what it is, 30 some odd things that this address, name, password, username, right? Standard kind of scary data or interesting data anyway. And you can write your own. So if you have a particular way that you do invoicing and the numbers have a format, you can add that format into our things. And now we can classify that data for you. So the data classification is great because you can quickly weed out things that are important, but don't have, say, regulatory data in them, right? If you're a healthcare provider and there's HIPAA stuff, I need to look at the HIPAA stuff first, you know, just pragmatically, because there's real world regulatory consequences to not doing that right. So that's one of the two approaches. The second approach is the Noname platform will auto-categorize your APIs, but you don't have to use only that. You can categorize them and bucket them and organize them and group them in any sort of way that makes sense for your business. And this is where you can sort of take them into these are the end critical APIs to our business. These are the next level. And the successful product security programs that I've dealt with have done that. Like I worked at Pearson, and we basically created three levels, right? We had the low level, you got automated tooling. We didn't look at the results, you know, God bless you. You're kind of on your own. I'm sorry, but you know, you're low priority. And we had middling priority, right? Where we would run automated tools and we'd burn some FTE time filtering out results, but we couldn't do a lot of handholding. And then the high tools got full manual testing, full filtering of results, and they got the full Monty, right? And that was the only way to sanely break that up because, like you said, you're resource constrained, which means I got to spend my time dollars where I can get the biggest bang for my buck.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Matt, just one final follow-up. So what would you say is parting thoughts for organizations, security, developers, AppSec programs in terms of where to start, how to start? I know we've covered a lot of that, but any parting thoughts that you would crystallize to light a fire under folks?
Well, I would definitely say you probably have APIs today, even if you don't know it. So one, just get some kind of a handle on what you have out there. And the biggest thing to me is, it's so hard to make good decisions with resource constraints without some visibility. Mm-hmm. And I think our platform provides visibility rather quickly. A couple of days, 3 days is not so bad to get a handle on all of my APIs, what data is going in and out of them. And there you can start making really educated decisions to swing the axe at the biggest portion of risk to chop it off, and then reevaluate and iteratively grow this thing over time. Because it will have to be iterative. And you have to, well, you don't have to, you can do wild guesses, but your efficiency isn't gonna be all that great. Like it does you a great service to be able to have data that backs up those decisions, right? So you're not guessing, you're deciding.
Yeah. Well, Matt, this was very informative. Thank you for sharing all your knowledge here. We'd like to take it back to a lot of our client base, if you will, and have some spirited discussions around API security. Yeah. And again, thank you for that.
Yeah, and congratulations on the Series C. I know it's a few months ago, but that was a tremendous raise. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, we're growing like gangbusters. It's amazing. I mean, like I said, the whole reason I ended up here was I flipped into I went to the dark side and went to the vendor space after seeing the product because I just thought, oh man, I wish I'd had that.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Right on.
Thank you very much for joining the show, and we'll hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fantastic.